This is a Collider.com audio interview.
How's your shoulder?
Good to see you again. So it's really hey, look at that.
I'm on much better painkillers than I was before.
That was the big question. Has the shoulder elbow healed?
It hasn't healed completely, but it'll be done in about January. I'm not ready for sort of going back to work just yet, which I'm quite relieved about, really.
I just wanted to talk about the character in this, and I know that the grandchildren came on the set, I believe, and maybe how did that inform you in playing your role, talking to people who actually knew him?
It's sort of difficult because you obviously your mind is full of expectations when meeting a family member, a son, a daughter, a niece, whatever, because you sort of feel there'll be an immediate sort of connection to what you're doing. And of course, it's not the reality of it. I mean, if that happened, but what did strike me about them very much, and what was really very pleasant, is you're kind of awkward when you meet someone like that. You're kind of like, hi, how are you doing? It's lovely to see you. It's a little way in here. It's very nice. And I just, how do you kind of, there's no sort of starting point of the conversation. So they all sat down, and I sat them all down and said, there's Leslie Ebb over there working, and I'm working, I'm in sort of uniform, and it's great to see you. And I went, vodka. And I kind of went off, and I found them, came to the cage, and I said, you got any vodka? And of course they had, because we were in Lithuania. For breakfast over the cornflakes. They cracked it, and I just sort of slowly sort of passed this round, and we all sort of toasted. And they kind of came out of their shells, and then got very loud, and then had to be told to leave because they were making so much noise. But it was, we connected, and it was just they're full of life, they're full of energy, they're a big family, they're a strong New York family, they're sort of, and you kind of go, well, that's what this is about. This is the heart of this movie is my relationship with Liev and Jamie, and the fact that we're a family unit, and how we then make that into a bigger family unit. And so I kind of felt good about it.
Did they tell you anything about him that you could actually use in your program?
Well, no. I mean, the thing of it is that for all sorts of reasons, he didn't talk about it. I mean, so the whole only towards the end of his life. I mean, my theory, I think, and I mean, it's sort of, I think it's fairly accurate, is that sort of the children of the people growing up that went through it started growing up and, of course, asking questions and saying, well, what was your experience? So, people have gone through the Holocaust and people have survived Auschwitz and things like that. These people have survived in a very different way. And they sort of, and I think the common theme was Tuvia Bilski. They said, no, this man led us through.
Moses analogy I thought was very interesting because, throughout, and it's obvious that he was even kind of, mentioned in the film itself, and I'm just wondering for your character, being familiar with the story of Moses, Moses doesn't make it to the promised land. So, for your own character.
Well, I think the obvious thing to say is that that my character is not a particularly good Jew. I mean, he's certainly not. But where we took that from, in effect, really, was that. In Lithuania, in Vilnius itself, Yiddish was the second language. Mm. I mean, these were totally integrated communities that got wiped out. I mean, it's not. I mean, that's another part of the tragedy is that there was trade, there was intermarriage, it was actually a huge melting pot that got destroyed and sort of. Tuvia's a businessman. He's not. He's first and foremost a sort of a Belarusian businessman who generally, we take the story on is that Alan's character says, I remember you in class, and he's like, I don't remember you even slightly, because school was never really that interesting to him. He only wanted to live life, and I just think that his faith is something that he's never used, and doesn't even want to draw upon in this situation because he feels guilty about the fact that he's been so. But it's in spite of that, it sort of brings everybody together and brings him together eventually. I mean, so he's. That was because my Bible reading's not particularly good. So
was it hard not being James Bond when you have to do the action? Like,
You're definitely next. not being James Bond.
Yeah, like when you're in the scene where it's an obvious like James Bond kind of moment where you go into the house and you have to shoot the.
I know. I'm not that kind of. I don't sort of have those connections in my head. The situation is that someone, you know, the guy can't really use a gun that well. He's sort of, you know, and certainly he's never shot anybody in cold blood before. So it's a completely different sort of mindset. I'm not thinking that the soundtrack's not going on in my head while I'm doing that.
Which actually leads into my question. Well, you're really the hero that we follow throughout this, but yet there are moments that you have to take extreme actions and actually do have to kill even a member of the people that you have to have saved. How did you approach that, and how did you approach the duality?
That's what fascinated me about this, really, is that there is obviously, and it's obvious if anybody watches the film, it's obvious if you read the books, it's obvious if you sort of understand this, the storyline is that these people did bad things. I mean, they did very, very bad things, and you always have to look at the net result, which is that 1,200 people walked out of the situation and survived. But keeping that many people together and under control, and there were power struggles, there were major sort of like, you know, shifts in power. There was Zush who was trying to sort of gain control. They took revenge on the local population. They fought very hard against the Germans at times, and it's that moral line that they're walking, but you know, for kind of good reason, that I found fascinating. I just thought that, you know, the question is, what would you do in a situation like this? How would you defend yourself? You like to think you protect your family, you protect the people around you, but what would you be prepared to do to actually make that succeed? I mean, you know, to protect yourself and your family.
Was any of that based off real things that happened?
Most of what happens in the movie is absolutely sort of reported, and it happened over a 3-4 year period, as opposed to, I mean, we've sort of condensed a lot of that into 1 year. But the sort of running away, going through the swamp, the fact that a whole infantry of Germans was sent in to get them, like 20,000 men were sent in to actually root them out, them and other troops like them. I mean, it all happened. It's just, you know, obviously this is a film, and we've got to put it dramatically into context.
In terms of movies about Jewish vengeance, do you view this as sort of a companion piece to Munich? Like, do you think about how they reflect on?
I don't think that. I mean, I would never think. If you'd like to do that, then you're more than welcome to do that. But I mean, I don't sort of put my work in sort of, you know, I kind of buy DVD collection of my work at home. So it's my blue period here. I mean, it's like my Jewish period here. Genuinely, and I know this might sound kind of naive, but I read the script, and the last thing on my mind was Munich when I read this, because I just, you know, this deals with a sort of, you know, with something that is close. Well, it's close to my heart because, you know, my grandparents went through the Second World War, but it's sort of, you know, it has a direct sort of linked to all of us, which is the Second World War. You know, the First World War was the war to end all wars. This war was the war that stopped and made us all human, which was we all signed treaties and said we'd never do this again. And we've been doing it ever since, you know, year by year. We've been doing it worse and worse and throwing, you know, wiping our asses on these treaties. And so it's kind of, it's an important piece of history that, you know, this story is in itself is, I just found so inspiring because of it was about the way people survived this situation and when they stopped fighting. That was the other thing that came up for me. When do you stop fighting? When do you actually sort of find peace? When you start living? And that line in this movie sort of is drawn in the sand by Tube and say, we stop this now, we start trying to live.
How did shooting
No, go on, please. Please shut me up.
How did shooting on location help inform your character?
A great deal. I mean, we always had to have in the back of our mind that we would, you know, we were doing long days. We're doing 12-hour days, 6 days a week. But we had warm beds to go to, and you know, apparently, the liver probably been bitching about it. But we did have trailers somewhere. they used to put them at different sort of map references and give us a map in the morning. And said, if you can find it, you can have it. It's like, so we'd stay on set, but we stayed on set literally constantly, and we'd be under tents and you know, just like tarpaulins, basically, sort of watching the scenes. And that gave us, it just made it very immediate. It made us that we were all involved with everything, and it kind of gave a great, it gave a community feeling to us, which we kind of was essential for the movie to sort of, you know, to give it that life. But I mean, as cold as, like I said, as cold and as wet and as damp and as kind of, you know, uncomfortable as it got, you kind of just went, you know, we're going home tonight, so it's okay.
What was Ed's directing style? Was he like a lot of rehearsals, or, you know,
We had lots of discussion before we started shooting, and then sometimes, you know, you get to a scene and it just would click, and you'd go, okay, this is we know what we want to do. We'd set the camera up and we'd shoot it. And other times, you know, I mean, there's sort of very emotional stuff, and you kind of give it more time, you give it more air around the scene. And then sometimes, you know, you'd just sort of hit a brick wall like you always do. And we'd just, everybody'd come in and we'd sit down and we'd discuss it. And we'd discuss, the camera department would come in and we'd say, maybe we can shoot it from up there. And maybe we'll give it that feeling. And if the scene wasn't working, we'd rewrite. Clay was on set and we'd rewrite scenes as we were going along. Or we'd sort of improvise bits and pieces if we could.
What about the Russian? Wow, I mean, the Russian, how hard was that?
I mean, I left school at 16. I mean, I can't conjugate a verb in any language, even English. So, I Russian was just, I mean, it's, you know, it's in Cyrillic as well, so it's reading on the page. So I just did it phonetically. And Liev's got an education, so he kind of managed to learn it a bit. It was tricky, it was difficult, and especially because Ed suddenly heard that, into his mind, that we were doing remarkably well from whoever was teaching us Russian, and decided to make 2-3 other scenes in Russian as well, which is like, I'm glad we did it. I'm glad we made the distinction. I'm glad because the conceit is that we're all speaking Yiddish and to each other, and that Russian spoken and German spoken around us, and we all have an accent because it grounds it, and at least everybody kind of, you know, it makes it sound that we have a uniformity. So, because obviously we've got English, Lithuanian, French. There's a whole international group of actors in there that would have been a little kind of Tower of Babel if we'd sort of been speaking in our own accents.
We never get to speak to someone after they had a huge movie come out like a month before. The last James Bond film came out, I guess, a month ago. Mm. Huge worldwide success. Mm. For someone who puts in so much effort and energy, do you pay attention to how successful it is? And is it more rewarding? Is it sweeter?
Of course I'd pay attention. I would be kind of I'm not interested. I don't care what impression it makes. It's great. I mean, it's we couldn't have expected it to do as well as it done. We put the work in, we put the energy in, and we made the best movie we could. And it's you can only but hope. I mean, if we knew how, if anything, everything was a surefire winner, it would be everybody would be doing it. So there's always a risk involved. It's been a pleasure to see it do so well.
Is it going to be a trilogy?
No.
No, absolutely not.
No fucking way. I'm done with that fucking story. I want to lie on a beach for the first half an hour of the next movie, drinking a cocktail.
Hilda Van Rarity, that's a
water
one.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do with the next one. Yeah, I mean, I know that we've finished this story as far as I'm concerned. We've got a great set of bad guys. There's an organization we can use whenever we want to use. The relationship between Bond and M is secure, and Felix is secure. We can, you know, let's try and find where Moneypenny came from and where Q comes from, and let's do all that, you know, and have some fun with it.
I was going to ask you, obviously, with the studio doing so well financially with these kinds of movies, I'm sure there's a they want to get started immediately with another James Bond. For you, are you more interested in doing another project like a Defiance?
We don't know when we're going to do the next Bond. I mean, certainly nobody's thinking about it just at the moment, and we're just going to give it a rest for the moment. And if we can squeeze something in, if I can do something next year, I will. But I haven't found out what that's going to be yet. but not defiance, not in the cold.
Well, has anyone approached you about a beach picture at all? I mean,
beach picture. Well, I can't serve. I can lie down. I can't serve.
We also did flashbacks of A Fool, which I saw on DVD a couple of months ago. It was very nice and intimate story.
I'd love to. I mean, that was a really kind of, again, a labor of love. That was a friend of mine had written that about 7 or 8 years ago for me, and it just we managed to get it made. And I'm very keen to sort of, you know, get stuff like that off the ground if I can, whether I'm producing it or not, or even whether I'm in it or not. It'd be nice to sort of get stuff that sort of to encourage people I know with lots of talent, and I'd just like to encourage them to sort of, you know, get on with it.
Well, I was going to say that with you being James Bond and being so the film's being so successful, a film like Defiance most likely is going to get seen by many more people because of you being James Bond. Are you aware of that kind of, you know, your presence will?
Am I tracking it? No, I'm not. I mean, it would be, of course, you know, I know what you're saying, but there's no real comment on it. Of course, there's, I mean, if it gets more people in to see the film, then that's fantastic. But you know, that it's a sort of given, maybe.
But do you think about using sort of that status to get movies that are sort of personal, smaller projects?
For sure. I mean, that definitely. I mean, in a sense, this movie was very much like that. I mean, Ed's been struggling with it for a long time. He went to Europe and basically raised the money in individual territories to get the money for this. And I think me saying yes to it and getting my name in it sort of gave it that little extra push, and thankfully Paramount Vantage came in and picked it up here. So it's that process. It's not a very clear cut process. I mean, as much as I'd like to say I'm going to definitely do that, it's still a lot of work involved to sort of say, okay, but I'm going to definitely work that way and try and encourage things if I can.
Is that a responsibility you feel?
Well, I think so, a little bit, yes. I mean, there's definitely a responsibility. I mean, you've got to sort of pay it back a bit into the business. But it's also because I love doing it. I mean, you know, it's totally narcissism as well.
Daniel, would you ever do a Steve McQueen movie? Yeah. After Layer Cake, everybody said, you're the new Steve McQueen.
Well, he's done them. I wouldn't try to repeat that. I mean, the Steve McQueen movies, they don't need touching.
Do a remake of Bullet or anything?
No. I mean, the movie's too good. I mean, it's just, I just wouldn't be interested.
Well, that being said, you do so, in this film you did some action sequences, and you do so many in the Bond films. When you take, for example, future projects, are you looking for more
kitchen sink dramas?
Maybe more character. Maybe. This is a character piece, but yeah. less action scenes.
I know what you're trying to do. So it's like saying, am I kind of consciously trying to pick stuff? I'm not consciously trying to do that. If there was that much material around for me to pick and choose from, I would be doing that. But there is a finite number of good scripts. There are really, you know, there are only so many good pieces of material. Good books out there, and you have to look for them. And so to say I won't do this is really kind of shutting the door on so much material. I keep my mind totally open, and we'll just see what comes along.
But you have the clout now to if there was a book or a play or something that you really wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to read it though.
I mean, you could start your own production company and start getting those things developed.
Yeah, what you would normally do is if I was going to do a movie and it was going to go like, I would start a production company, and I don't need to start a production company to sort of do that. I mean, I can have a production company in an office and sit in an office with a phone and go. I mean, it's like that doesn't, you know, what you do is you find the material, you get the job, and you make the job, and you just, having a production company is a byproduct of making a film. It's not, it doesn't make a movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But there's not like something that you've been dying to, you know, develop just because it's something that's close to you that you really feel passionate.
Dream project that you're now in position.
First five books of the Bible, just. Just it's a small thing I've been working on for years, but it's just something I really want to do.
We were talking to Liev a little bit earlier about your fight sequence, and he said that you guys, between things, would kind of try to work it out, what should we do here, and stuff like that. I mean, how important was it for you to get that? Because it's such a, you know, it's such a visceral kind of thing to see brothers beating each other up like that.
Well, I mean, having done a few now, it's sort of, I know that the only way you get them to look right is by rehearsing. So it's what we did. We did for weeks before we started shooting, is that we went into the studio and put mats on the floor and sort of figured out. I mean, what we wanted to do is try and make it as brotherly as possible, which is, you know, why there's a, you know, there's a punch in the bollocks, and why there's sort of the things that you would go, that's a brother, that, you know, those are brother fighting. Obviously, the Cain and Abel thing with the rock, which came about, and it was just a piece of improvisation. There was a rock there, and it was, how are we going to end this? How are we going to end this fight? Because actually, the only way to end the fight is that by the other one wanting to kill the other one, and you know, there's a rock to hand, and it's sort of, that was a sort of, you know. Because he's bigger than me, I had to hit him with something.
He said it was your idea to punch him in the balls, is that true?
Yep.
Thank you.